And a very pleasant good morning. Welcome into the MRMC Doctor's Office program. We're now at 9:34 and we have 73 degrees. We're going to say hello to my friend, Dr. Dan Bortson. How are you, sir?
Good. Good morning.
I guess the first thing we need to talk about, by the way, if you want to talk eyes, give us a call. Doc will take your questions too at 263-2424, 388-6424, toll free 800-892-2300. How did Daryl Worley go for Ian Higbee?
Well, he and the band came to the house and ate us out of house and home. I think they climbed on a bus at 2 o'clock from Nashville and came up, got to our house about 9. And he warned me, he goes, there won't be any leftovers, and he was right. So, no, it was fun. They were a blast. And the concert, I think, was great. I thought the attendance was really good. And Mother Nature was kind of throwing a curve, trying to rain. And Daryl said something about, you know, let's all have a prayer here and that this rain's going to go away. And, you know, it did. It was just, it worked out good. It was a little brisk, but it was, I thought the concert was great. And Daryl had a good time. He told me afterwards, it was like, yeah, this was a good crowd. He was like, he likes playing. He called them real people. This is the real people. And that's what he said during the concert. He goes, this is the kind of, and that's just kind of how he is. He's the real deal. He's a class act, and he's a great storyteller, and it always amazes me how he can blend his experiences or his music and with a story with that's pertinent to where he plays.
All right, one thing we want to talk about today, and kind of goes hand in hand with Daryl, and you met him on a charity cruise, and he started talking about his daughter, and then you were able to help her out, and that's one of the things we want to hit on today. What happened with her?
Right. Well, I can't get into the real specifics with her, of course, but we met on a, it's called the High Seas Rally. It's 2,000 bikers on a cruise ship, if you can imagine that. But it's a neat thing because it's a charity thing where we take people on dialysis, and we actually pay for them to go on the cruise, take care that they can get that. So anyhow, he was a celebrity on the cruise, and we met him, and dealing with headaches and attention trouble, and lo and behold, he ended up bringing his wife, and still does, wife and Savannah, his daughter Savannah, up from Nashville, and you know, lets me do my thing. He refers to me as, I'm glad you think out of the box, which is pretty true, I think, with regard to, you know, what I've found and what I do with headaches and attention trouble, and it's actually spilled in out from headaches into you know, PTSD and even depression and anxiety. So I tripped on something and I'm just pulling on the string is all I'm doing. And you know, I learn every day a little bit more about it.
All right. We're what, a month and a half into the school year or something like that. If kids are coming home with headaches, first thing people think about, it's got to be their eyes. And maybe it's not the typical problem people think of with their eyes, is it?
Well, I don't even know anymore if they think about the eyes, because my clue is if a child is having trouble in school, the attention can be the problem. Now, 80% of how we attend to the world comes through the eyes, okay? So the eyes should be the right spot to look. What I have found is that it's usually not actually a power problem so much. It's actually a pointing problem with the eyes. And that's where I go to work, and that's what I have found. So anybody who's having trouble, this doesn't have to be school either. It can be, nowadays, it's people who have eye strain and stress, who have jobs that are, you know, they're staring at the computer all day, or we're sitting in here and what you look at on your screen, and I don't even want to go into what all it is, but it's that working distance. It's kind of that 3 to 4 foot area, and that's where you're at all day. That's not a normal thing for the eyes to work on, because our eyes were originally built to, you know, to, I don't know what we were hunting, look for a deer or whatever out in the distance. And we've gradually moved the world in closer. And kids, when they're first starting a school, the coordination of looking at things up close, reading is not a normal eye, you know, in the beginning God activity kind of a thing. And a lot of them. It's not most of them, but I think it's 30% and 40% of the population has trouble with convergence, which means you're turning the eyes in a little bit to look at those things that are closer to you, and that's the problem that I work on. And that problem actually not only causes, you know, vision trouble and so forth, it actually creates a stress. And I can show people in 5 seconds, it's not a subtle thing, the stress that I can relieve if they need such help. And I mean, it's not subtle at all. It's like, wow, what is that?
And I'm not real smart, but stress would tend to lead to headaches, wouldn't it?
Well, stress, headaches for one, but stress is what causes the body not to work in sync, which causes the body to stop working right. And then, you know, you fit in the, you know, we name the disease once the thing shows up, but it was basically stress that caused that dysfunction, which now causes results in a physical problem.
All right, if you were going to talk to, say, a group of teachers or counselors at a school, what should they look for that their students may be having a problem that they can in turn contact mom and dad and say, hey, this probably needs to be looked at?
Well, I think it's simple. I think if they're having a problem in school, again, I'm back to the 80% of the inflow of what we're supposed to attend to goes through the eye. So if you've got a child I've got A students that what I do helps, okay? But if you've got a child who's, you know, in the, certainly if they're in the bottom, if they're below average in the class, it ought to be looked at. I mean, it ought to be one of the first things to look at.
All right, one of the ways you help with that is what's called a prism, and that may scare people. They don't know what the heck it is, but it you don't see a prism, do you?
Right, well, prism is just, we know of prism because how it'll scatter light and it divides the light into, it can divide the light into the rainbow, and we've seen things that all prism does is it just moves light. And what I just do with the prism, you don't see it really in the glasses. It can add just a little bit of thickness maybe to the lens once in a while, but it just moves. What I do is basically I move the light so the eyes don't have to turn in so far. And it's just a little tiny bit, but it makes the way the person feels and looks. I mean, I'll put it in front of a person who needs it, and everything will clear up. And then I tell them, I go, there's no power in that lens. You're clearing it up. I'm just moving the light to now where your eyes can do it. And the eyes are basically saying, thank you. We've been waiting for this for a long time.
It's like relieving a pressure almost, isn't it?
It is. That's exactly what it is.
All right, this is cool.
You're smarter than you think, Bob. That was good.
This is really neat. How'd you figure this out?
Well, I actually tripped on it almost a year ago. It was in November. This is a funny story. So for years I've been doing this, and I remembered that it was a young boy. I think he was about 8 years old at the time, and I knew he was from Sheridan County, but I couldn't remember who he was. And so this has been going on for, you know, 10, 15, more, maybe more years. I didn't even know exactly when it was. And then last year in November, in fact, it was November 21st, I go in, patient been with me for a long, long time. One of those families, you know, that you just really like, you get to know. And I walk in, and he goes, that boy you're talking about on the radio all the time is my grandson. And I was like, really? And I, you know, my started putting together. I was like, God, you know, that could be right. And he goes, oh, no, it is. He assured me that. And so I'm doing the exam, and I have my staff. I get one of my staff. I go get, you know, the grandson's file. And so I get down at the exam and so forth. And I pull the file, and I go looking back, and I'd seen him when he was 4 and 5 and 6 and so forth. And I, you know, sure enough, he was wearing prism, and I didn't know that at this time. And anyhow, I find the original time that I put it in. And it was funny because my handwriting was very distinctive. You know, us doctors, we don't write very good. But I actually had written, it wasn't a lot of things, but it was very succinct, very out of the ordinary. And I recognized it right away. I was like, yeah, this was what I did when I was noticing what I noticed that first day. And So he was absolutely correct. It was. And here was the really wild thing. This got me looking around the room. So this is on November 21st of 2017. I'm looking back. And the crazy thing was that when I saw his grandson was November 21st of 2001. And I'm like, what's the chance? I mean, it's one in 365. I'm like, you know, the planets are lining up or whatever. But that was a crazy thing. And it was funny because the grandpa was also saying, he goes, you know, people have already, before they said it, it was like people in town were talking about that they thought it was his son all along. And I don't even know how that got started.
Must have heard something on the radio spotlight or something.
Well, I had put it out there, but how they connected the dot on that, I don't have a clue because I couldn't remember. And I'm that's one flaw that I've got is remembering names is a horrible, it's a curse that I have. I'm just terrible. I can remember a person's their eyes and their eye situation, but to remember their names is just I was bad in school that way too. I couldn't do classes like anatomy. To remember all those names and different things, or chemistry and things like that, was just terrible. Doing things logically was a whole different ball game, and that's kind of what I think the difference is that I've done, you know, here with, you know, how I'm treating patients now.
All right, can I ask you an obscure question?
Sure.
We're going to get down to 38 degrees or so Thursday night. Winter's here or almost here. How does that affect the eyes?
Well, the biggest thing is the. It's more the humidity than anything, because when the fireplaces go on or the heat stoves go on or the furnaces go on, everything dries. Okay, so there's a lot more dry eye issues in the wintertime. One of the good things about the 38 is, in fact, if we can get it down to about 31, then the mosquitoes go. But I was thinking that it kind of kicks allergies in the teeth a little bit too. So there's a trade-off. It's an environment we're walking into. It's a different one.
How do we deal with dry eyes? I know one thing we talked about back in the 90s together was punctal occlusion.
Well, first of all, our tears, our body deals with it. It's not always as fast as maybe we need to. And so the glands actually secrete things differently to try to, you know, in a dry condition, they'll secrete differently. There's different types of tears that come out of the glands and so forth. And so they do adapt. Not everybody adapts well, and that's where you run into people that have, you know, burning eyes. The funny thing about burning eyes, and this goes into punctal occlusion, is or watering eyes more so, is that the eyes will burn, then they start to water, and it's a reflex tear. And the guy comes in, and he says, well, my eyes are watering all the time. And I look at him, and I tell him, well, you got dry eyes.
And he said, huh?
He looks at me like, yeah, what school did you go to? But it actually is the basal tear or the natural tear that's supposed to keep the eye lubricated is not sufficient. And then you get the reflex tear, which is a watery tear, which is the same tear one does when they're emotional or crying or something like that. And that's the watery eye. But the missing link is that dry eye that was originally there.
How about this stuff you see at all these stores to put in the eyes to help out if you think your eyes dry? Is that a good thing, the tears?
Well, I'm big on artificial free, first of all. I'm not a big drop giver outer. Okay, it doesn't mean I won't give out samples if I've got them, but I'm not a big one because the trouble with drops, and it doesn't mean that they don't help. So to answer your questions, yes, they do help. The problem with them is 15 minutes after you put the drop in, that drop's gone out the system. So you're going to put a drop in every 15 minutes.
You're treating a symptom instead of the problem.
True too. Yes, definitely.
All right, so what is punctal occlusion? Is that still a good thing to look at?
Punctal occlusion is a lot of people have dry eyes because their drain is literally too big. So it pulls the tears out that are in the eye. And so the occlusion is we've got this little, it's a little silicone, it's got like a little cone that opens up that you can put in to slow that drain down. And it actually is pretty effective.
All right, where are we headed tonight? Well, before we do anything else, we got a phone call coming in. Let's see who this is. Salisbury Line, hi there. You're on the doctor's office.
Yes, sir. I've got my right eye. I get pressure like glaucoma, and it flares up ever so often. And they give me drops and get it down. any operation or something they could do to keep it from coming back all the time?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not going to be able to answer it specifically because I don't know your specific case. And to be honest, I'm not the guy to come to for something that's specified, and I can't do the surgery. There are surgeries that can be done if you have a... So you don't use the drop all the time?
No, just whenever it flares up, I've got three drops, and
it almost sounds like maybe you had like an iritis or something in the past that maybe that's going. There are some surgeries that can be done in cases that sound like yours. I don't know your specific one, so I'm not going to be able to tell you specifically.
Yeah, it might go 2 months, 3 months, and then it might go 2 years.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like there's something in the that's slowing down the outflow of the fluid that's inside the eye, and if that gets blocked, it can be blocked by a swelling. Like if you have an iritis, your eye will block that.
Yeah, and then, I know when I'm getting it because I start seeing halos. And
correct. Right.
Start hurting my kick.
Yeah. Kind of an interesting thing, and I don't know where you're going, and you know, as far as that, but looking for a glaucoma specialist to ask that question, to take a look to see, sometimes there are things that, I mean, to mind, it sounds like there ought to be something to bypass that thing that's causing it to, you know, that's triggering the problem.
Yeah, well, I go to the VA, so.
I gotcha.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate the phone call. Can you give us an eye 101, Doc? What makes up the eye?
Well, the eye looks like a camera, basically. In fact, probably the camera was created mimicking an eye. So you've got the front part of the eye, which is, well, let's do the eyelids first, okay? That blocks the light entirely, or is the case, if you will, for protection. So the front part of the eye, the cornea, is actually about 2/3 of the power of the eye. You then go through, and then you have the iris, and which creates the pupil, which is the aperture of the eye, if you will. And then behind that, you've got the lens. The lens is what focuses when we're young. We lose that ability as we get older. And then, so you need reading glasses or bifocals or progressive lenses like that. Then you go to the back of the eye, which is the retina, which is would be the similar to the old film we used to use. I guess you can't hardly talk about cameras the same way anymore. And then there's a nerve that goes out the back, which there's millions of nerves in the retina, which was the old film, if you will, of the camera. And then the way I used to describe it, there's a nerve that went out, and then that went to the back of your head. And I equated that to photomat, or we don't even know what that is anymore.
Oh, yeah.
we used to actually have to take our film and go develop the pictures and wait for it, you know, a week or two later, I guess.
All right. We got a Moberly line. Hi there. You're on the doctor's office.
Yeah, there's a lot of mornings when I wake up, my eyes really itchy and achy, and I rub them, and it feels like there's like little sand pebbles in them. Is that something that's common, or what causes that, and what can I do about it?
Well, welcome to Missouri is probably the biggest one on that. The problem when you sleep, we're not blinking, and so we're not replenishing the tears and so forth, and so we're not working on keeping the eye clean, or rinsing the eye with our tears, if you will. And then there's all kinds of different things that can happen with the glands of the eye. So warm compresses used actually even before you go to bed, and you might want to put a drop, you know, a preservative-free eye drop in your eye before you go to bed can help that. You might notice that it changes during the whatever time of year it is, and because you may have a little bit of an allergy that's going on in there too.
All right, thank you.
Hey, let me bring up a big term so I can sound impressive, even though it's not. What is blepharitis?
Well, blepharitis is an inflammation of the eyelids, so that's kind of can be related to what he just talked about. It can certainly develop into that.
So what does it do? Because both my daughter and I have it.
Well, it's just, again, the eye itself is becoming inflamed because there's different reasons for that. There's glands and so forth that are in the eyelid, and anyhow, something is not functioning properly. And you can actually help that a bunch by, you can use like lid scrubs, also using heat on the eye, which improves the circulation and so forth. And then sometimes I recommend using heat, and then at the end of after the heat, use a cold compress. You get the circulation in there, and then you kind of get the cold in there to cut down the inflammation.
Interesting. That's how you deal with bad ankle, too. Funny how that all works.
Planet Earth, man.
All right. 800 line. Hi there. You're on the doctor's office.
Yes. I was just wondering if there was anything out there new for retinitis pigmentosa.
Yeah, RP is a tough one. And they're doing a lot of work. In the area, we're talking now about, we just talked about the retina and the nerves back there, and there's a genetic retinitis pigmentosa, at least we believe there's definitely a genetic entity to it, because it'll run in families. I'm a big one. I've got a little boy, right? Actually, he's a little Amish boy that has that, and it's run in his family, and I'm doing some things with him with a vitamin called pycnogenol. It's an antioxidant. It's a very strong antioxidant. Vitamin C is also those. So I would recommend that to anybody, kind of as a preventative. I'm saying preventative. It's not going to be an absolute, but to try to slow things down. They are doing a lot of things in the retina. Now you're talking in the nerve area. Like anything else nerve wise that's a complex area, and there isn't anything that's like, okay, yeah, here we've got a cure for it. I'm not so sure we're going to have a cure for something like RP. That's a tough one, but I think doing antioxidants makes a lot of sense, because now you're again, an antioxidant pulls stress off the system.
Do they still help after the person is totally blind?
I didn't quite understand the question.
Does the antioxidants, does it still help after the person's totally blind?
An antioxidant is basically an anti-aging, okay? Oxidation is what causes aging in all parts of the body. So you can never go wrong with antioxidants. I mean, you might be taking it, let's say you're taking it for the eye, but it might help your left arm somehow.
Right.
All right. Hey, thanks.
Excuse me, just one second. What was the name of that again? I'm sorry.
Pycnogenol, PYCNOGENOL, I think.
PYC what? My pen wasn't open.
N-O-G.
N-O-G.
E-N-O-L. And that's not a prescription. It comes from the bark of a pine tree, if I remember right, and the Indians knew about it, so you know it's good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for calling today. All right, hey, we got 45 seconds left. I've been waiting years to ask you this question. I was born in Green Bay, saw an optometrist there back in the late 60s, early 70s.
You're a Packer fan?
Born and bred.
Oh, we're done.
All right. The eye doctor always found girlfriends in the back of my eyes. Does that actually happen?
The doctor found girlfriends in the back of your... I did not go to the same school as that optometrist, is what I'm going to say.
All right. Hey, folks want to get a hold of you, Doc. How do they do it?
660-263-3737, or just stop in. We're right across from the post office in downtown Moberly.
Best staff on the planet, right?
It is.
And you're going to stop right there, aren't you? All right. Thanks.
Any questions?
All right. Dr. Dan Bortzen, he's joined us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office program.